Good evening, everybody, and welcome back, folks. Tom Snyder with you here on the radio show for Tuesday night now. It's the 25th of August, 1992, live and direct out of the Ultimate Broadcasting System here in Los Angeles, California. And joining us tonight from Newsweek magazine and from McLaughlin & Company on television is Eleanor Clift. Glad she's here tonight. She just wound up an interview with Jay Leno over at the Tonight Show across town, dashed across the street to get here, and will join us shortly. Eleanor Clift has been the political and congressional correspondent for Newsweek magazine for the past 4 years. Like many other political correspondents, Eleanor is just back from Houston and the Republican National Convention there. We'll talk about the right-wing Christian element at the convention, the fact that like many conventions, this was more of a media demonstration than a political convention. Also about the differences between the Republicans meeting in Houston this year and the Republicans meeting in 1988. Also tonight, an update on Hurricane Andrew as he, she, it approaches the Louisiana coast. Busy night on the Tuesday night radio show. Okay, we are back. As you know, if you've been listening to the radio today or watching television earlier this evening, Hurricane Andrew, the one that went through Florida yesterday with winds up to 145, 150 miles an hour, is bearing down tonight on the Louisiana coast. They expect it to make landfall about 3.5 hours from now, just a little bit to the west of New Orleans, Louisiana. Joining us is Jay Walker. Jay is a reporter for the news department of KPEL Radio, 1420 on the AM dial, 107.7 on FM, our affiliate in Lafayette, Louisiana, with a progress report. Hi, Jay. Thanks for coming on tonight.
Thank you, Tom, for asking us to come on. We're here in Lafayette, and we're just kind of waiting right now. We're starting to feel the first effects of the storm. The winds right now, I guess, are about 20 knots, and we've got some light rain in the area. And, of course, we know that it's going to be quite some time before the wind subsides and the rain goes away.
Now, let me ask you a question here. What are they saying about Lafayette? Whereabouts in terms of the storm track are you?
Actually, Tom, if the storm continues on its northwesterly course, we're going to take a direct hit from the storm. We're located about 50 miles west of Baton Rouge, 125 miles west of New Orleans, and about 35 miles as the crow flies from the Gulf of Mexico.
Now, I know that you like good news and good copy, but I detect in your voice a sense that you really wish this weren't going to happen.
Well, Tom, you know, I've been living down here for over 20 years now, and we've gone through some storms before, but we've never gone through in this area one like Andrew. You've got to go all the way back to Hurricane Audrey in 1957 and Hurricane Betsy in 1965 to find any kind of storms of this magnitude that came into this area. No, if we could go outside and as it blows, if we could blow right back and send it someplace else, we'd be happy to do it.
What about precautions in the area right now? How much evacuation is going on? How much boarding up is going on? That sort of thing.
All of the coastal parishes that are right along the Gulf Coast have been ordered evacuated and were ordered evacuated early this morning. Those people are gone. In Lafayette Parish, which is just one tier up, but also a very low-lying area, evacuations were recommended by the mayor about mid-morning today. Many of the people have left. Most of them have gone north to Alexandria, about 100 miles from here. Mm-hmm. Others have gone to the 7 shelters in the parish. All of those are full. The rest of the people decided to go ahead and ride it out, and they went ahead and got their plyboards, got their foodstuffs, their batteries, their bottled water, and are just going to go ahead and stay at home. It was interesting. I talked to one gentleman who, the lumber company here in town, and they went through 5 18-wheeler truckloads of plywood in 6 hours here in Lafayette today.
Let me ask you a question. Oftentimes we hear that when this sort of event is about to happen, or in the aftermath of Charleston here a couple 2 years ago in South Carolina, all of a sudden, the cost of lumber goes way up. Is there any evidence of price gouging right now in Lafayette?
Not that we've seen.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, you know, Lafayette is a town of about 100,000 people, and it's right in the heart of Cajun country. We're dealing with some pretty honest people here. As a matter of fact, I went out and bought some plywood myself, and I got six very large sheets of good, thick half-inch plywood, and it cost me about $50.
Not bad. Now, when the storm is over, that plywood makes a great thing to put your train layout on. You know what I mean?
It's nice to know we'll have some use for it when it's finished.
What about the radio station? What about your tower? I mean, could it blow down when this thing comes through? I mean, they're talking 140, 50-mile-an-hour winds. How sturdy is that broadcasting tower?
Well, we're hoping that the broadcasting tower will withstand it. You know, we, of course, build the towers down here with these storms in mind because here on the Gulf Coast, we're always susceptible. I went through Hurricane Carmen back in 1974, which had some pretty strong winds as well. And the radio station I was working at the time never went off the air. We've gone ahead and converted here at our studios to generator power. We're also on generator power at our transmitter site, and we're hoping that we'll be able to stay on throughout.
And what about the personnel at the radio station? I'm sure you've laid in supplies of, you know, water, what food you can, because it's highly likely that you'll be there through the night.
It's very possible, Tom, that we'll be here for a couple of days. When these storms come in, you plan on being without electricity for a couple or 3 days.
Mm-hmm.
So we have plenty of non-perishable food items here, plenty of bottled water. We have a crew of 13 that are working. Four or five of them are out at various sites throughout Lafayette Parish. The rest of them are here at the studios doing various assignments, including talking to a lot of the people from around the country who have called this evening. But we feel like we're pretty well prepared as far as the broadcast is concerned.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, our job is just to assimilate as much information and get it out to the public as fast as we can get it.
Well, for the folks who are listening to you tonight on 1420 AM or 107.7 FM on KPEL, I would assume that you'll be on through the night.
We'll be on through the night. We have suspended all normal programming. We're in our hurricane mode, if you will.
Sure, I understand.
We'll be having a continuous broadcast until the storm is over with, or until the tower falls down, whichever comes first.
Yeah, now I would expect that you may preempt our show too as you go along tonight, right?
Yes, as a matter of fact, we have. We've had to preempt all of our programming because there is so much information that we need to get out. We also have a staff meteorologist, and we have someone from our staff with him, and he's doing five updates an hour, just letting us know exactly what's happening. But right now, things are pretty calm in Lafayette. As I said, the winds are about 20 knots or so.
And what are you carrying on your radio station right now?
Right now, we just came out of a break with our meteorologist, and right now we're getting ready to go to our news director with an update on the evacuations, on shelters, and that sort of thing.
Okay, wouldn't you know, Jay, that the night you go on to the whole country, they don't even hear you in your own hometown? Damn. Jay, I appreciate your time. Be well and stay safe, okay?
Tom, thank you very much.
My great pleasure. Jay Walker, reporter for KPEL AM and FM in Lafayette, Louisiana, on the air through the night down there, advising folks about... Wait, is he still there? Hold it, I got one more question. Jay, I forgot one thing. Hello?
Yes?
Yeah, if you're 125 miles west of New Orleans... Would that mean that New Orleans is going to get away clean on this?
Oh, no, they're not going to get away clean. Because the storm is moving in a northwesterly direction, they've already had quite a bit of wind and rain, but they're not going to get nearly what they originally thought they would.
Okay, thanks again, my friend.
All right, Tom.
All right, bye-bye. Jay Walker, KPEL Radio in Lafayette, Louisiana, on the approaching storm, Hurricane Andrew, due in there about 3.5-4 hours from now. And if the intensity of the storm holds, it'll come in there at about a four-plus category hurricane, the worst or most severe being a Category 5. By the way, I heard a story on radio coming in here tonight from Miami. The National Guard is on the streets now in South Florida. In many cases, they are trying to stop looters. What goes on in this country when the disaster of this kind occurs that people all of a sudden take to the streets and begin stealing things that do not belong to them? Come on, folks. We will continue with Eleanor Clift of Newsweek magazine and tell you more about the Republican National Convention. You probably have not heard enough politics today, so we'll crank it up one notch higher on the Tuesday night radio show after these messages from the local stations. We are back and joined by Eleanor Clift from Newsweek magazine, where she is the chief political correspondent. Eleanor also appears weekly on the John McLaughlin program, McLaughlin and Company, which is in many areas seen on Sunday morning, although you'll check the listings for time and station. She's been with us many times over the past 5 years, and when I found out that she was going to be on The Tonight Show with Jay Leno, we called and said, Eleanor, please, 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 and she kindly said, I'll come over. Thanks for coming in tonight.
I'm glad to be here.
How was the Jay Leno experience for you?
Well, when they called this afternoon and asked if I wanted anything special in my dressing room, what kind of wine I liked, they said a lot of the guests like to have a glass of wine. I began to worry. How relaxed did I have to get? But they are really nice people. They do everything to make you feel at home. And fortunately, I was the last guest, so by the time I got out there, I felt like a volcano waiting to erupt. You know, just push a button and out come the stories about John McLaughlin. And we started with that, and then we talked politics. So the 8 or 9 minutes goes by really fast.
I was going to say, did you notice that it was over almost before it started? And did you have the feeling? I always do when I do those programs. But I got so much more to say, you guys.
Right, exactly. Let's go an hour and a half. I know, you're just getting into it.
Yeah.
You're just settling into the chair and feeling comfortable, and it's time to leave.
Let me talk to you here about the newest CBS New York Times poll, which I just heard on radio coming in here about an hour ago, and that puts the spread between Mr. Clinton and Mr. Bush back up to around 16%, which is pretty close to what it was before the convention. And the opinion advanced by one commentator on the local station here that whatever bounce came out of the convention has now dissipated. How much stock do you think we can place in these polls at this point in time?
Well, I think the polls taken immediately after the president's speech and the convention are really not to be trusted. I mean, people are just tuning in for the first time and expressing some opinions. But I think the polls are beginning to settle down, and I think the president really does have to worry that he has not convinced people yet that he's serious, and I question whether he is. I mean, he has put forth these proposals, tax cuts, a jobs training program, without explaining where he would get the money to pay for it. And I just think that he is giving people a sugar high, and they realize that it's just not for real.
The thing that I notice, and by the way, I think that just as the polls after the Republican convention could not be believed, I think that might be said of the polls right after the convention in New York that nominated Bill Clinton, that those polls did not represent the truth as to what the American people were thinking.
Well, that was an extraordinary bounce, to use the word that the consultants used, that Bill Clinton got. But those polls did not dissipate as quickly as everyone thought. I mean, everybody really did think they were totally artificially inflated, but Clinton has maintained this lead, and I think what we're now seeing emerging from the Republicans is a strategy to discredit Clinton. I mean, George Bush still has not been able to figure out how to put forward a positive agenda of his own, and it looks as though we're seeing the same old Republican strategy that has worked for them in the past.
Yes,
very
ma'am.
Well, to portray the other fellow as too big a risk to take, and it's character assassination, and it's misrepresenting the Clinton positions. And my favorite is the way George Bush talks about Clinton's record in Arkansas and the number of taxes that he supposedly has levied. I think they've got the count up to 123. When you look at the list, for example, they take gas taxes and they count it twice because it's regular gasoline and diesel. I think they break up, hard liquor and wine. It's bogus. And, the president this is not an honest mistake on the part of the Republican campaign apparatus. I mean, they had to sit around and figure out how to do this. I think we are, looking at a case of, intellectual dishonesty.
Let me ask you if there are any sins on the Democratic side. You know, last night here I was talking to a gentleman from Sonoma State College. And they have a thing up there, the best censored stories of the year, where they select 10 news stories that they feel have been selectively ignored by the media for whatever mm-hmm. the reason. And this year on the list are all kinds of stuff about the Persian Gulf War, that Saddam Hussein never posed a threat to Saudi Arabia, as the president said. There's another one in there about the Freedom of Information Act and how it's been watered down by the Republicans. And I said to this guy, I said, you know, it seems to me that most of the stories that have been heavily censored are those that protect either the Republicans, the president, or corporate America. I said, aren't there any stories about the Democrats? What about Speaker Jim Wright? And what about George Foley? And what about some of the things, Alan Cranston, the Keating Five? I said, there are a lot of Democrats in trouble, too. So I'm wondering if we're in a campaign where it's only the Republicans who are doing things, dirty tricks type thing, and nothing happening from the Democrats.
Well, it depends what you call dirty tricks. I think Bill Clinton is going to try to portray the president as a radical right extremist. Mm-hmm. Now, maybe, you know, that's not fair either. I mean, each side demonizes the other. But I must say, so far, it's the Republicans who are going after Hillary Clinton. The Democrats don't go after Barbara Bush because she's too popular. So a lot of this has to do with the hand that you're dealt. If Clinton were way behind, he might have to go negative as well. I mean, it's the guy who's behind who usually throws more mud.
Let me ask you about Hillary Clinton here. Why shouldn't she be an issue in this campaign? After all, she has injected herself into it. At some point in time, did they not say, or did not one of them say, we're a blue plate special, if you elect one, you get us both? Has it not been said that her husband, if he is elected, will consult with her on certain matters? And by the way, there's nothing wrong with that. That's okay. But then if you say that, isn't it legitimate for the opposition side to ask questions about that? And I must admit to you, I think they're being a bit mean-spirited about it. But I do think it's a legitimate issue for discussion.
Well, asking questions is one thing, but taking some writings that she did 20 years ago and misrepresenting them is something else. I mean, they routinely say that Hillary Clinton advocates children suing their parents over chores like taking out the garbage.
Not at
now,
all.
If you read what she wrote as a law student at Yale 20 years ago, she says, in extremis, where children are abused, where perhaps a child might have a cleft palate that the parents refuse to have fixed, that maybe the rights of these children should be considered in a court of law. I think that's perfectly reasonable. And anybody like Hillary Clinton, who has spent time in legal aid clinics and really seen the dark underside of society, would take that position as in the natural course of events. I mean, I don't think it's radical. So to take that, to portray her as a radical feminist, I don't know what a feminist is versus a radical feminist, where the dividing line is, mm-hmm. but to label her that as though somehow she opposes families and she's, you know, not a God-fearing mother, is to me going out of bounds.
No question. In fact, the supposition, if you looked at the convention carefully, was that if you voted for a Democrat, you didn't believe in God. And that's preposterous. So I have to pause here for the radio stations. We're talking with Eleanor Clift of Newsweek magazine and McLaughlin and Company. We will continue after station identification, news on the half hour, whatever. Then we'll be right back. We are back and joined tonight by Eleanor Clift of Newsweek magazine. You know, I keep saying here, I really wish that the two of them, and especially the president, because I do believe he is the transgressor. I detect a certain desperateness in his presentation and in his tone. And there's a certain mean-spiritedness amongst those people who are with the president. But there are some critical issues here. Chief among them, they've got to stop spending money we don't have on things we don't need. They're going to spend us broke. When they've already done that, but they're going to spend us into bankruptcy. I think this country's in serious trouble. I was sitting and having lunch in Beverly Hills today. 3 and 4 storefronts on one street closed down. Gump's, the legendary West Coast department store with branches in San Francisco and California, now in Beverly Hills, is closed down. I mean, this is the result of 4 years and more of inattention to reality in this country.
So when the recession hits Beverly Hills, you know you're in trouble.
The recession.
Been in the inner cities for a long time.
Right.
And, you know, that the politicians could ignore. But when it hits places where they shop and they have lunch, conceivably they might start paying some attention. But, you know, the deficit and cutting the deficit is not a winning political issue. And you didn't hear much talk about that in the president's acceptance speech. Instead, he's talking about tax cuts and giving more money away. I mean, it is totally irresponsible. And then they say the details will be made available in January when he presents his budget. You know, if people look at that, I just don't think they're going to take him seriously. I mean, I guess I have faith in the public that they are going to send this president a message in November that you can't get away with this anymore. Now, Bill Clinton's economic plan is nothing to write home about either.
Right.
He leaves a lot out, but he has not foreclosed any options like declaring unequivocally he will never raise taxes, you know, read my lips. I mean, that was the lowest thing that George Bush did. I mean, he has really crippled every politician's ability to levy any kind of taxes in this country for, you know, time to come. And nobody wants to cut programs, and so meanwhile, we just cut quality of life and services.
Let me ask you a question here. It almost sounds as if you, and I read your work in the magazine, it almost sounds and reads as if you are cheering for Bill Clinton to win.
You know, I like to think that I can analyze this race, but I think that I can analyze it fairly. I think that I could very well go to bed on election night and George Bush will be reelected, but I think that I can speak for a lot of people, Republicans included, that I don't think the country will feel real good about itself if they reelect this president. Now, if that's cheering for Bill Clinton,
but
I don't know if that really counts.
And help me here. I don't know if because you work for Newsweek magazine, you are supposed to have a certain objectivity about this, or in the new journalism, do you have license to be subjective? Because you do write subjectively in your magazine.
Right. I think the direction of journalism, first of all, I think total objectivity is impossible. We all bring our particular set of circumstances and our biases, I'll use the word, to
uh-huh.
whatever we write. And generally at Newsweek, we are encouraged to bring a voice and a point of view to our stories. I think that I have given the George Bush a fair shot in what I write. And in my public pronouncements, particularly on the McLaughlin Group, I guess, like everybody else on that show, I have become something of a caricature. And I don't think there's anybody who watches that show that thinks either Jack Tremont or I are registered Republicans. So I will admit to that. I am not a registered Republican.
Okay. Okay. But there is a perception in the land, especially amongst conservatives and amongst many people, that somehow the media is ultra-left, that somehow the media is against honest conservatism, that somehow the media is going to bash George Bush and bash George Quayle and present Bill Clinton and Al Gore as knights on white horses.
Yeah, the problem with that criticism is, look earlier.
I mean, Bush is now running against the media.
Sure, yeah, and in Houston, young Republicans would march through the press room chanting, "Tell the truth, tell the truth." And the president even did a little media bashing in his acceptance speech. I don't think the criticism holds up, because if you remember earlier this year, it was Bill Clinton who was being, you know, carved into little pieces by the press. I mean, I did my share of that. I wrote a piece that was very critical of his record in Arkansas,
right?
And, you know, I am not blinded by the fact that he is a Democrat. I mean, I think he's got lots of flaws, and we're going to examine them. But the notion that we're cheering for Bill Clinton and we're covering up anything negative is just, you know, right now the Clinton campaign happens to be making a number of very smart moves. I mean, the bus trip extended the glow of the convention, and it's George Bush's campaign who has, which has been really disorganized. They had to call in, you know, Jim Baker, Secretary of State. Giving up that job to go run the campaign out of the White House.
Which,
and
by the way,
it raises a few eyebrows.
By the way, that's in clear violation of constitutional ethic. And as a matter of fact, such conduct would not be permitted under California law. You cannot have a you cannot have a you can't have the chief of staff of any elected official in California running his campaign for re-election. That's not allowed under California law. It's against the law. And it ought to be against the law nationally. I mean, to consider that the White House chief of staff, the man responsible for who sees the president and who doesn't, the man who sets the agenda for the president of the United States, is also running his political campaign, well, is, in my view, a direct violation of ethical behavior.
Right, and they're also putting out the fact that in a second term that Jim Baker might be the economic czar. I mean, this is the man who's going to deliver us all, including George Bush. And if he does win, maybe it's Jim Baker who ought to move into the Oval Office. Actually, I would feel pretty good about that.
By the way, what about Clinton's record in Arkansas? Can he run and keep that record in the background, or will that loom as a possible negative in his campaign?
Oh, I think that the Bush campaign, their first round of advertisements, will probably focus on Clinton's record in Arkansas.
Which is okay.
Which is fine. And, you know, he needs to be able to defend that best he can. And it's a mixed record. It's a very poor state, and he's taken it from, you know, 50 to 47 in a number of categories. And the joke in Arkansas is, thank God for Mississippi, or else Arkansas would be last. But he's been an innovative governor. He has tried, and he does have some things that he can point to that people will admire. But there's plenty there to attack, and I'm sure the Bush campaign will be doing that.
Do you know what I find so fascinating about Bill Clinton? Remember, he was the buffoon of the 1988 Democratic Convention when he wouldn't get off in Atlanta.
That's right. He delivered. It was a, what was it? I think it was a 33-minute speech?
A nominating
which
speech.
Which was a nominating speech. Went on way too long.
By the way, it was a seconding a nomination.
Right. I think they even turned off the teleprompter in an effort to get him off the podium, and the only applause he got was when he said in conclusion. You know who made an equal fool of himself at the Republican convention was Senator Phil Graham, who was supposed to deliver the keynote that would set the stage for his presidential campaign. So that may have been strangled in the crib.
By the way, Clinton has a problem making a short speech, I think. Remember at the convention, and even Bush went way too long, and Clinton, these guys go on forever. I mean, you know.
Well, at least Bush, by speaking for almost a solid hour, took away one of his attacks against Clinton, because the Bush people have been making lots of fun of Clinton for speaking for 53 minutes, and then George Bush went even longer. Clinton has a problem focusing his thoughts. That's true. I mean, he is, we've used the phrase in Newsweek, he's a policy wonk. He knows a lot about issues, and he wants to tell you all about it, the five-point proposal, the example that happened to him, and what his mother thinks about it. And he,
what time is it, and here's how I made the watch.
Right. Yeah. That's right. So I think he's working on getting down into soundbite territory. He needs to do that for the debates.
He also needs to lose 20 pounds fast. Now, is McLaughlin still fooling around with the ladies, or is that all over?
Oh, that's all over, if it ever existed. I think he's more talk than action.
No. One of his former employees nailed him on sexual harassment here about 4 or 5 years ago.
He did have a lawsuit against him, which was settled out of court, and, you know, I haven't heard anything. You know, I'm a character witness for him. He's okay.
Is he? Okay. By the way, he is the caricature on that show. We are with Eleanor Clift of Newsweek magazine. I'm going to open the phones here. We'll start taking your calls at 800-756-0852, the toll-free line. Coming up later on tonight on many of these same stations, the actress and Emmy Award winner Dana Delaney is here. Tonight my guest is Eleanor Clift, and we will continue after station identification. We are back chatting tonight with Eleanor Clift of Newsweek magazine. I know that you're a political correspondent, but does the length of the campaign burden even those who cover it and derive their income and their professional satisfaction from covering campaigns? I mean, this thing's been going on since February.
This is the shortest campaign we've had in a long time. This has been under a year. It really didn't get started until January. Look back to 88, and the Gary Hart shenanigans went on, I believe, in 87. We were well underway 2 years before. So by recent standards, this is blissfully, blessedly short.
You have a hand in a little column in Newsweek called CW, Conventional Wisdom. Mm-hmm. How has the CW turned around here since now that both conventions are over? For example, Barbara Bush, she was always thought of as the kindly grandmother, but she's seen in a different light right now, according to CW conventional
yeah.
wisdom.
Well, she's kind of granny get your gun. I mean, I think people understand that Barbara Bush is a lot tougher than her image. And she's also being used in a very calculated way by the campaign. I mean, the platform was extreme to the right. They favor a constitutional amendment that would ban abortion. They even voted down a plank that would have expressed compassion for the victims of rape and incest. Then Barbara Bush gives an interview to the news magazines and says, mm-hmm. I don't think abortion should even be in the platform. So that's the kind of the wink and the nod, hey, we're not really all that extreme. And Barbara has come out on the traditional family and said, we're not just for this traditional family. Whatever you call family, we're for it. So she's the softening agent.
She's the, she's the good cop.
She's the good witch. Marilyn Quayle is the bad witch.
What's the CW on Mrs. Quayle?
I
see her as a very frustrated woman.
Right. I would say, bitter housewife, resents having to give up her law career. For Marilyn Quayle to get out there and express solidarity with the nation's homemakers is really, it is so hypocritical because this woman, the bitterness that emanates from her over having to shelve her career to play ceremonial wife, I mean, that has really been there. And she, turned to novel writing. And mm-hmm. She's produced a kind of a grade B novel on the side with her mm-hmm. sister. I mean, she has the same need to so-called fulfill herself that the rest of us have.
Okay, we're going to the phones. Here's Bob in Seattle. Hello.
Hey, good evening, Tom.
Good evening, Bob.
Yeah, long-time listener. I've tried to call a number of times. Lucky enough to get through. Thank
Thanks.
I guess my comment is, or my question, it's really disheartening to listen to all of the rhetoric that the politicians put out without any hard, substantive facts or programs. You know, I guess I'm kind of tired of listening to. My question is, what does a woman's right to choose or not choose an abortion? How is that going to help us get out of the $4 trillion national debt we're in? How's that going to turn the economy around? What's it going to take to get these guys to listen? It seems as though most of your guests talk about the lack of issues that the two candidates are talking about. How do we get them to turn around and start talking about that?
Well, the press can force the dialogue to a certain extent, and I think we will be doing that. And the debates, there should be two or three of them in the fall, will also mm-hmm. produce some discussion about issues. But the agenda is really set by the candidates and principally by the incumbent president. I mean, he has the power of the bully pulpit, and George Bush really does not have the courage to run on the economy because the economy isn't doing squat. So they are trying to change the subject, and they've been doing very well at that.
Well, you know, it seems for years we've elected, I kind of call it fluff instead of rock-hard facts, but it's just disappointing.
Well,
just a little side comment. I saw a couple of bumper stickers that I really liked the other day. One of them says, make it a clean sweep, reelect nobody. And the other one says, two-term limit, one in Congress, one in jail. I'm not certain that that's not altogether off the mark.
Thank you, Robert.
Thank you, sir.
All right, bye-bye. John Akron, Ohio, hello.
Hello.
Yes, sir.
How are you doing tonight, Tom?
Fine, John.
I just want to tell you something. You're right when you say that Rush Limbaugh's only objective in life is to get Bush in office.
He's become a shill for the White House.
Yep, and I love UIB, let me tell you that.
Nothing.
But let me say something here, okay?
Yeah.
What is Herzegovina going to mean to the president come election time?
I think that the president wants to keep the lid on these foreign hotspots. He really does not want to get involved in what is essentially a civil war over there. And maybe by the intent of your question, you mean, should we even be talking about Bosnia-Herzegovina? Should we be focusing on domestic issues? And I think that to a large extent that the dialogue here at home does really want to focus on what's going to happen to us in our lives.
I don't think you're going to see Bush discussing much foreign policy at all during this campaign, because he's been attacked with the label of being a foreign policy man and not a domestic man.
But he spent a large portion of his acceptance speech sort of setting himself up as the victorious foreign policy.
Did you notice that the name of Mikhail Gorbachev never came up during the discussion of the fact that they now are having a freedom in the Soviet Union or whatever it is over there? Never once was Gorbachev's name mentioned, this great partner of ours. Never once.
Well, I guess he's a bit player compared to the role that George Bush played.
Joan Penfield, Illinois. Hi.
Yes, hi, Tom. Yes, hi. Eleanor.
Hello.
My question is, why is the media so biased in favor of Bill Clinton?
Yeah, that's a question that I think that the White House has planted in the public's mind.
Because
if you'd asked the same question three months ago when we were writing that Bill Clinton was dead meat, that he was the most vulnerable Democratic candidate in years.
Al Gore, 10 minutes. McNeil there tonight. Al Gore, 10 minutes. Good Morning America. Perot, 10 minutes.
Well, Perot is yet another candidate. That's not biased towards Bill Clinton. How much time did the president get?
Al Gore. We see Al Gore. We saw Clinton during the Republican convention, okay? Gentlemen's agreement, they don't do that.
Joan, let me tell you something how it works. I mean, if George Bush would come on this radio show, I'll give him 3 hours. If Dan Quayle will come on this show and talk to you, the people, take your calls, I'll give him 3 hours, as would anybody else. You know, we are limited. We ask people to come on if they don't want to. Like Bush and Quayle, a lot of times, they don't want to go on these programs.
May I say one more thing?
You can, but let me do the commercial first. I'll be right back to you. Okay, we will continue after these messages. Okay, Joan, where were we?
Oh, I don't know. Okay.
But you wanted to say something, and I'm going to give you the opportunity. Go ahead.
Okay. All I know is I got my Newsweek today.
Mm-hmm.
And one article in there calling the Republican convention a feast of hate and fear. Now, Eleanor, I'm going to tell you something. I'm an average American. You know, the average American, if you know any, are very fed up with the media. We're tired of your opinions. When you told us tonight that you're given a freelance to verbalize your opinions, you're also very involved with the conventional wisdom. I couldn't understand why it was so skewed, but now I know.
Well,
we're not interested in your opinions. We have our own. Give us the facts. We don't want subjective adjectives that comes out in the news media all the time.
Can I ask you a question?
Yes.
Do you think the fact that the Democrats did not use the word God at their convention is a fact?
No. No. Look at the adjectives and how they describe the candidates, okay? I've been writing them down. I'm tired of hearing passive style of Bush. I'm tired of hearing attack on the Republican side, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Look at the subjective adjectives. These are subjective. These are personal opinions.
How would you describe the president's governing style? If you didn't use passive, how would you describe it? You wouldn't call him an interventionist.
Wait, no. How would you describe the president's style of running the government, Joan?
I would say frustrated.
Okay. Anyway, Joan, I'll tell you, you know I'm down to time here. I'd love to carry this on further.
Thank you very much.
And I thank you for calling. And
I love the McLaughlin Group. I love the Beatles.
Okay.
Beatles.
Good night, Joan.
Okay, bye-bye. Okay.
It's been great fun, Eleanor. Thanks for making us part of your visit to California.
Well, thank you. I was glad to be
here. Okay, and thanks for all your help over the years. Eleanor Clift of Newsweek magazine here on the radio show for Tuesday night. Thanks for listening, everybody. Murphy from the hit television series China Beach. Delaney has gone on to the silver screen this summer. This Emmy Award winner is a native of Manhattan. She moved to New York to pursue acting, first in television commercials, appearances on some soap operas. She soon turned up on the small screen as the Bruce Willis ex-girlfriend in Moonlighting and as Tom Selleck's lady friend in Magnum P.I. Her most recent appearances on the big screen include the motion picture House Sitter with Steve Martin and Goldie Hawn, which is now released. And she also has a role in a picture called Light Sleeper, in which she plays the part of a former drug dealer. The two pictures indicate the range of her talent as an actress, Dana Delaney of China Beach, with us on the radio show for Tuesday night. We are back and joined by Dana Delaney, the great star of China Beach, which is sadly now off the air. Also one of the stars of House Sitter, along with Goldie Hawn and Steve Martin, in release this summer. And also a picture which is called Light Sleeper. I believe that's on the screens now, is it not?
It's open in New York. It will open here September 4th.
Anyway, welcome to these microphones. I'm an enormous fan of your work, and I love you in the pictures, and I thought you were terrific in House Sitter.
Oh,
what a sweet,
you.
Sweet show. Was it as much fun to make as it looked like? I mean, just what a wonderful show that was.
It was fun. But, you know, the cliche comedy is hard, especially for me because I hadn't done comedy in a while. I used to do it all the time. I find that the set of a comedy is a little bit more serious than the set of a drama for some perverse reason.
Wow. You would think it would be the exact opposite.
Yeah, well, because in drama you need the break, so people are always, you know, cutting up and, you know, playing jokes on each other.
But not on the comedy set.
The comedy, it's all about timing and energy, so you got to keep it up and concentrate. I think it takes more concentration.
Now, will you be attending the Emmy Awards this coming Sunday night?
Yes.
And what will your function there be, a presenter?
I'm presenting, and also I'm a nominee.
For? China Beach.
It
right.
lives on.
Right.
It's never going away.
I would think that would be hard, though, difficult, to be a nominee for a show that's not on anymore.
Well, they're supposed to judge you on one episode that mm-hmm. you submit, hopefully. Who knows?
And so you go there and you present, and you're a nominee, and if you win... It's kind of like hitting a home run in the last game of the season, even though your team has no chance to go on to the World Series, I guess.
Yeah, it would be a nice parting gift. That's sort of how I'd
sure.
look at it.
What was the wind down of that show like? It was such a successful show. It really touched those of us in the audience who watched it. And as it was winding down, you know, we've all gone through the MASH demise and the Mary mm-hmm. Tyler Moore, et cetera, et cetera. What's it like when that winds down?
For the people acting on
yeah,
it?
Yeah, sure.
I don't know about everybody else. I'm someone who likes to move on and not think about it. And I won't think about it until maybe a month later, and then I'll maybe go into a bit of a depression. So I was ready for it to be over.
Mm-hmm.
I was kind of excited about the change. I like change.
And when it's coming to an end, do you know what the change is going to be? Do you know what the next step is? Did you?
No, I had no idea what it was going to be next. No, I think, the first thing was Light Sleeper, and that was... 2 months later.
And then House Sitter was done?
No, actually, I shot House Sitter right after Light Sleeper. It just, you know, magic of Hollywood. It
yeah.
released first.
Yeah, you never know when your Christmas show is going to run.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I know what you mean. Now, Light Sleeper. This is it seems to me, and I have not seen this picture. I've seen House Sitter, mm-hmm. and I saw you in Moon Over Parador, and I saw you in China Beach. But it seems to me that this is a bit of a stretch for you as an actor.
Well, it's funny. People have said that, but compared to China Beach, it's no different. Because in China Beach, I played an alcoholic.
Mm-hmm.
And especially the last season, I was going through a lot of post-traumatic stress and that kind of stuff. I was in rehab there. I was in therapy. And I play an ex-addict in Light Sleeper. So it wasn't that different for me.
Like I said, probably to go do Light Sleeper. No.
I mean, it's a different thing because it's a Paul Schrader movie, and I had worked with him and Patty Hearst, so I was aware of what he was like as a director already.
You know, I interviewed Paul Schrader in New York about a year and a half ago. I went back there to do some programs for NBC. And he had a picture coming out at the time. I cannot remember the title of the picture. He is he's a very intense man.
Yes.
To put it mildly.
Yeah.
And I said to him, I wish I could remember the name of this picture. It did absolutely no business.
Mm.
But I said to him, it's a very dark picture, and he thought I was referring to the storyline. I said, well, that too. I said, but also, in the way you shot the picture, you really have to strain to see things because it's
almost in total darkness, these scenes.
Was it Penny Harris?
Cause that's, no.
It was really dark.
No, this was a picture about a couple who are vacationing in Europe, and they pick up a...
Comfort of Strangers. Yeah.
Tough picture to watch, and a very tough picture to talk about, because although I saw it, I didn't get it.
Yeah.
And I mean, since he was a guest of mine on a program, I didn't want to say that to him. But I'm sure by the line of the conversation, he felt, geez, you know, Tom does not really understand what this picture's all about.
But, you know, it's funny, having worked with Paul, and then I saw Comfort of Strangers, and I worked with Natasha Richardson, who played Patty Hearst, and she's also in Comfort of Strangers. I thought the movie was so funny, and I was...
What, Comfort of Strangers?
Comfort of Strangers.
Oh, geez, they kill him at the end. This
But the ending is just, oh yeah, riot, laugh riot. No, but I'm sitting in the Beverly Center, and there's, you know, as you said, there was maybe six people in the audience.
Yeah.
And I was laughing my head off, and nobody else was. But you have to get Paul's sense of humor. He has a very perverse, dark sense of humor.
Yeah, yeah. And so what can I expect when I go and see Light Sleeper?
It's dark.
Dark? Slow.
It's a little slow.
Yeah,
It's a Paul Schrader movie. It's his world. I think it's probably his most personal film. It's based on people that he's known. That, I mean, he said this and has come to, it came to him in a dream and he wrote it down. I like the movie. I like it.
I remember talking to him about Taxi Driver, which he did, it seems now like 1,000 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember talking to him about that picture, and at the time he was living in Los Angeles. He and his wife had been separated. He was single for the first time in some time, and he talked about, you know, in Los Angeles there's not an awful lot to do late at night here.
Right.
About all there is Denny's and porno clubs and stuff like that.
Jerry's 24-hour Denny's.
Yeah, that sort of thing. And he said he felt like a taxi driver, and that once he got this feeling, I guess this script came out of him in 3 days, he just sat down at the Underwood and started typing away, and he had it 3 days later.
Yeah.
And it went on, in my view, to become his best picture. I don't think he's ever surpassed that picture. I thought Patty Hearst was a good film, but I don't think it went beyond Taxi Driver.
Well, that character in Taxi Driver is taken one step further in Light Sleeper. It's a very similar character. In fact, Willem Dafoe drives around in a town car around the city delivering drugs. And instead of driving, this time he has a driver. But it's that character at the age of 40. I think, I don't know how old Travis Bickle was, but it's like 10 years later.
Yeah, yeah. Now, will you go on to do just features, or will you do episodic television again?
Oh, no, I think television is great. I'm not a snob about television.
Well, I didn't say you were, but maybe you find the work...
Were you inferring?
No. But I thought maybe that you found motion picture work was coming to you, the work was more available
to
you.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. No, as a woman, I think you have to stay in television. I mean, there are those few actresses that don't have to do television. But I actually like doing television. I don't mind the speed of it. I wouldn't do a series right away.
Mm-hmm.
But a TV movie, if it was good, it just has to be good. In fact, I just finished doing a mini-series, 6-hour, I guess they're calling it a limited run series, that Oliver Stone produced, that just finished shooting today, called Wild Palms.
You know, I saw him with Costas last night. And if I remember correctly, they talked a little bit about that series. When is that coming on? Is it this fall, or is it a spring release?
It will probably be in the sweeps in February.
Yeah. He's an interesting guy. I don't know how he would be to work with, whether he would be demanding as a director or not. What would you say?
I don't know either, because he wasn't around.
He wasn't around, right?
I'd like to know.
Yeah. Oliver, get the money up front and hire somebody to do this.
he's in pre-production for his new movie, which is Heaven and Earth, which I really am looking forward to seeing. It's based on Lele Hayslip's book about Vietnam, which I think he's hoping to shoot in Vietnam, which would be a first. So Bruce Wagner, who wrote the series and is based on a comic strip in the back of Details magazine that he does, also produced. And also Alec Ho, who's Oliver's usual producer, he was there.
Okay. So anyway, movies of television, yeah, good idea, movie of the week. You know, I told you before we came on, Sunday night I was home and they came on with this swirl of Aaron Spelling called 2000 Malibu Road, mm-hmm. with Lisa Hartman and with Drew Barrymore and with Jennifer Beals from Flashdance, right. and some other people. And, you know, I started watching this thing and it was all very pretty and very Malibu and very, I mean, a lot of cleavage in this picture. You know,
yeah, Drew Barrymore. Was it steamy?
Not really.
Oh, sorry.
It wasn't, and not only that, but I kept thinking, well, this is really going to get good.
Yeah.
Because there was a murder involved, you know, and a bit of mystery and a lawyer and a cop. I thought, this is really going to get going. And geez, you know, 2 hours later, the thing finally went off. And I said, why have I invested 2 hours of my time in this thing?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you got to be careful because they, you know, movies on television, they can really suck you in the first 5 minutes. And then, if they, you know, if they got you, you can't get away from this thing.
Yeah.
So now the credits come on and the thing says, we'll be with us Wednesday night for the startling next episode. I thought, geez, you know, I better set the tape machine until the light went. I said, wait, you don't want to watch this anymore. What do you like to watch on television?
What do I watch? Well, I do watch the McLaughlin Group.
Do you really?
I think Eleanor on. I think it's a riot.
It is funny.
That. Yeah. And I watch, I used to be addicted to Studs.
Really?
I really loved Studs.
What, do you just kind of sit there and kick back and hoist a beer? And
well, I'm very mad at Fox. I think they should know that they took it off at 11 o'clock in L.A., and that was when I watched it. So I don't watch it anymore now. But, I mean, you're going to think this is really stupid, but I think it's romantic.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah?
I do. I get that thrill of the first date watching it.
Yeah.
I sort of live vicariously through them. And I know that they write those lines for them and all that stuff, but I think underneath it all, it's two young people meeting for the first time.
Yeah. What is the thrill of the first date, would you think, in your view?
Oh, I love first dates.
What do you like about them?
Well, it's just anything's possible, and you don't know anything about each other, and you don't go into too much history on the first date. You know?
Mm-hmm.
The second date, you find out about the mother problem or something. But the first date, everybody's on their best behavior.
Yeah. What is the purpose of the first date? I guess it's just to kind of establish what ground rules a little bit.
And I guess
kind
so. Of, and just if there's an attraction, really.
How do you let somebody know if there's not going to be a second date?
That's hard. That's why I don't date anymore. It's the second dates.
Well, you don't go out anymore, no?
No. I'm a steady boyfriend.
Oh, okay. Good. Good. We are with Daniel Delaney, one of the stars of House Sitter, which is now in release with Steve Martin. And Goldie Hawn, also one of the stars of the new Paul Schrader film, which is called Light Sleeper. We will continue with Miss Delaney and eventually be joined with some of you on the toll-free exchange after these messages from the local stations. We are back with Dana Delaney. You are a native of New York, New York.
Well, I was born in New York, but I was raised in Connecticut.
Well, almost the same thing.
Same thing.
Same thing. And did you go to school in Connecticut?
Uh-huh.
And what was your relationship with New York City living in Connecticut, the bedroom community?
I used to go in to get my hair cut at Henry Bendel's at the Sesame.
No. Henri Bendel.
Yes, Henri, right. And we used to go shopping for school clothes.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember going to the Russian Tea Room and going to the Broadway shows with my mother about it. Great things.
Mm-hmm.
Probably terribly elitist to say, but my idea of New York was between Grand Central Station and 57th Street. That was about it.
I didn't go as far south as Grand Central Station. Not nearly that far south. I went 51st Street to 59th Street and from 1st Avenue to 7th Avenue. That was New York City to me.
Yeah.
The rest of it did not exist. And I loved it and still do, by the way.
Yeah, I still do, too.
And when you finally went there to work, how difficult a thing was that? Did you have jobs other than actor when you, mm-hmm. did you wait tables? And?
It was a very difficult transition for me, and I was surprised how difficult it was, because I knew New York. But it's very different living there on your own, supporting yourself for the first time, I didn't really know anybody. I didn't have anybody could help me.
Mm-hmm. Your father and mother are not in the business.
Not in the business, and they weren't supporting me. You know, I was told, said, you know, get a job.
Get a job.
Thing, right. And I lived in a tiny railroad flat over on 81st and East End for $125 a month. And, yeah, what did I do? I cocktail waitress. I bartended for one day down on Wall Street.
Were you not a great mixologist?
Well, I actually was a very good bartender, but the guy who owned it was mafia, I'm sure. And at the end of the day, he said to me, put your hand on the bar. And I said, why? He said, just put your hand on the bar. And I did. And he took out a hammer, and he said, if I see you giving free drinks to anyone, I'm going to smash every one of your fingers. And, of course, I'd been giving free drinks all day long.
Oh, you had been?
Yes.
Yeah. Why would you do such a thing?
I'm Irish. So I never went back the next day. I
don't
so
blame
scared.
You. Who wants to, yeah, right, right.
I never even got paid for it.
Wow.
I did that. I sold tickets at the Met for the Metropolitan Opera, mm-hmm. and ABT. And I worked in an antique store in Madison Avenue.
Did you not?
Mm-hmm. Knew nothing about antiques. I still don't. Such a racket.
Really?
Yes. They make up everything.
Oh, you're kidding.
No, they do.
You mean Queen Anne didn't sit here?
It's not even a Queen Anne chair.
Did you sell anything at all?
No, it was horrible. I was really not happy 9 to 5. I just kind of shriveled with those hours. It was not good for me.
Now, 81st and East End Avenue in New York, that's a pretty nice neighborhood.
It was very much, it was sort of Yorktown, I guess.
Yeah, it's up near Gracie Mansion almost.
Yeah, it
I
was
I used to
not
have very good friends that lived at 82nd and East End Avenue,
really?
In a condominium, yeah.
This was not a nice, this was...
When you say a railroad flat.
You know, it was just one long room.
Gotcha.
With a bathroom in the back and rarely hot water. You know, and those horrible, I mean, everybody has their stories, but those horrible mornings in the dead of winter in New York, and there's no hot water, and you
awful.
Don't have any money, and to take a cab, and you've got to count every penny to get to the subway, and all that stuff, you know. It's exciting when you look back on it.
Builds character, Dana.
That's right.
Builds
right.
character, builds resolve, builds resourcefulness.
Yeah.
And then how about the hot summer? When you can't get a breath of air in the joint, you know, and the cockroaches are everywhere.
Yeah, you turn on the light and they're your friends.
Yeah, we are here. I remember I was lucky. When I lived in Gotham, I had a four-story brownstone with a cellar.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the cellar was full of cockroaches all summer long. I used to throw meat down there just to keep them happy. You don't want these suckers upstairs. They start moving furniture in New York. We are with Dana Delaney, one of the stars of a new picture out now, the Paul Schrader film, which is called Light Sleeper. I'm going to take your calls here with Miss Dana Delaney on the toll-free exchange. We're at 800-756-0852. That is 800-756-0852. We got free drinks on the house from the Irish lady tonight. We will continue with more of you on the toll-free exchange. After news headlines, station identification, whatever the stations have planned, here on the Ultimate Broadcasting System. Okay, we are back with Dana Delaney, one of the stars of a new picture, which is called Light Sleeper, which is in release now in New York. You know, I saw you Sunday night, or Saturday night, on the Larry Sanders Show, the Gary Shandling thing, and you had just a teeny tiny part.
Yeah.
But it was so cute. Do it for the audience, because I want you to tell what your part was.
Well, you know, it was one of those things where I got out of the shower. This is just a little background.
I like this background.
Sure. And the phone rang, and it was Gary Shandling, and saying, would you come and do my show? And I thought, wow, I'm flattered. Sure, you know, I'll be happy to.
Yeah.
I said, when? He said, in an hour.
See, Gary works real close to time over there.
I said, well, let me dry my hair. So I went over there, and the funny thing was, They had an hour. We had an hour to work with me because I was going on to do the Dennis Miller show. So it was so surreal to do the Larry Sanders show, and then I got back in the car and went and drove to do Dennis Miller for real.
Mm-hmm.
Which, and there was absolutely no difference between the two. I mean,
and by the way, folks, the Gary Shandling show is a spoof of talk shows, and the Dennis Miller show was a talk show. There's no difference between the two.
I mean, I sat on the fake set of Larry Sanders, which is acting like the fake set of, you know, Dennis Miller. And I sat there and talked about movies I had coming up, which are the same ones I talked to Dennis about. And then afterwards we got up and he said, you know, just act like we're talking. And so I just started talking for real about my house.
I know.
That's really what, I'm in a lawsuit over my house.
You really and truly are,
yes,
in real life?
Yes.
Why?
Well, it's over now. It's
well, but why did you have it in the first place?
Because...
you know if you drop something, I'm going to pursue it, you see? Because I love stuff about houses. Was this a renovation thing by any chance?
No. There was two things. One, when I bought the house, the owner and the realtor knew that one of them... Yes, they actually did, but they admit to that. They knew that the house below me was going to build up and block my view.
Aha, uh-huh. They did not disclose
me.
Something.
Did
There's
not
a law.
Disclose
you
it.
Must
right.
disclose, right, disclosure.
So we settled that out of court. And the other thing, which I mentioned in the Larry Sanders show, is that... because of poor construction, one whole wall in my house during those heavy rains,
mm-hmm.
which is a concrete wall, was weeping like a miracle.
Mm-hmm.
And I was joking that I was going to start selling tickets to it.
Yeah. And so, I mean, is your view now blocked by said house below you?
No, I ended up having to buy the said house below me at an inflated price to save my view.
Wow, and what is it that you look at?
The
Pacific Ocean.
I have a slight bit of the ocean, but also just trees and a playground, and
mm-hmm.
just more of an expanse. You know, it was mostly because I'd lose my privacy.
Right.
You know.
And so now you have the two houses, or you tore one down?
I have the two houses. I rent one out.
Okay.
It's just I don't want to sound like I'm some land baron. It's just a tiny little bungalow.
I know, an eensy beansy.
Yeah, teeny teeny.
I understand. Yeah, I thought maybe it was something about renovation. As one who has renovated three houses, I can tell you, don't ever do it.
Mm.
It's brutal.
Yeah.
It's easier to tear down the old one and build a new one than it is to renovate the old one, and they make you crazy.
Yeah.
You know, as I say, I've done three of them, and every time I do it, I find myself in the second year of a three-month job. You know, it's craziness. Anyway, All America's on the line here. Here is Mike in Skokie, Illinois. Hello. What is it? Have you ever been across the sea to Ireland? It sounds a little bit like that.
I don't know what it is.
I'm waiting to see if
Give
a voice...
Give us a clue, Mike.
I don't think Mike is there. Okay, Mike, get a life. Take care of yourself. Bye-bye. Mike's question was, we should have known this. How do you get from New York? How did you get from New York to L.A.? Probably on an airplane.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. George Baltimore, hello.
Hello.
Hi, George.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Dana.
Hi,
Good.
George.
That sounds like a wind-up nativity manger I had.
Yeah, something. It sounded a little bit like, have you ever been across the seas to Ireland? But I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah, Dan was doing an interview with Bob Costas last night. It was pretty exciting. She got up on the chair and started bouncing around.
Oh, yes. I was just in one of those moods.
Yeah, I served in Vietnam for a year. I understand you took a trip over there.
Yes, I went twice.
The China Beach Show.
Where were you in Vietnam?
Mostly up and down the coast from Saigon up to, I think it was called Quy Nhon,
mm-hmm.
about halfway up.
What, mm-hmm. what year were you there?
68 into 9.
Uh-huh. So you were...
mostly driving. I think I covered about 15,000 miles over there.
Yeah.
Trying to supply some personnel around.
Yeah, but no problem because they have all those multi-lane roads over there, huh?
We built everything that was over there at the time.
I know we did.
We had a power station they built, water treatment.
Have you thought about going back to visit?
Yeah, I guess so. Even in the Army, I flew over on a DC-8 stretch with 250 other guys.
Mm-hmm.
Had regular meals served. I came back on the exact same plane. It was a Seaboard World Airlines, you
mm-hmm.
know, that
mm-hmm.
exists.
I think the plane exists, but I don't know where. I think I read somewhere where that aircraft is parked over in the Mojave Desert where they have all those surplus airplanes.
Right, huh?
Airliners.
Yeah, so that's made that war easier. It was guys come back every day. And,
mm-hmm.
You know, like you see them on the way back. We stopped in Japan. I'm sorry. I got back, and I didn't really do any protesting, so I guess I should have. I was just relieved to get back.
That's all right.
Thanks for calling, George.
Okay, Dan.
Glad you came back safe.
Right, okay.
Where did you go in Vietnam?
The first trip I started in Hanoi and went south, Da Nang, Hue, Saigon, down to the Delta, Coochie, to the tunnels.
Mm-hmm.
Let
me ask you about Hue. I remember during the war that was always referred to as the old imperial city of Hue.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And I know that it took a lot of bombardment, a lot of shell fire in the war. Has it been restored? Is it once again grand and splendid?
No, I don't think it will be grand and splendid again. I mean, you can still see the emperor's palace
mm-hmm.
and things like that. I had the most wonderful guide in Hue named Mai, a beautiful, beautiful woman who... she took us to this dinner at the emperor's home, where the emperor's mother lived and died
mm-hmm.
until just recently.
Mm-hmm.
And we had this, you know, 10-course meal, and it was just for me and my boyfriend. And they dressed us in the emperor's robes. And, of course, my boyfriend couldn't fit into them, but I felt like a trooper.
Well, was it a small emperor?
Tiny.
You have a large boyfriend?
Well, he's large also, both. And then musicians playing for us, and it was just the two of us. It was really wonderful.
And why would she do that for you?
Well, it's actually a tourist attraction. Anyone can do it.
Oh, I see.
You pay
okay.
$80, which is a lot of money over there.
Yes, it is.
Yes, a lot. And they put on a little show for you.
When you were in Saigon, did children beg? Did the children still beg on the streets in Saigon?
Yes, they do, although I must say there was a marked difference between 1988 and 91, a lot less begging. The country changed so much in 3 years that I'm sure now that a year has gone by, it's changed even more.
Yeah, see, I was there in the 60s when the war was really on. I went as a reporter for Westinghouse Television. Then Governor William Scranton of Pennsylvania was sent there by then President Lyndon Johnson, so I went on that tour.
Mm-hmm.
Then I went back with the late night television show after the war was over. But we still had a presence there.
Uh-huh.
And we went all over the place. We went to Chu Lai, we went to Hue, we went to Da Nang. We went all over the place. And I was really astounded by the kindness of the people there,
mm-hmm.
By the beauty of the children there.
Yeah.
By the great food in the restaurants, especially in the 60s, when the influence of the French was still very much dominant there.
Yeah.
And by the smoke in the air from all the motor scooters. I could not believe the exhaust fumes that were generated in that city by motor scooters.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's still beautiful. The people are still beautiful and so friendly, lovely, hardworking people.
Mm-hmm.
Very hardworking, industrious. Food leaves something to be desired, except for Hue. You know, Hue is known for their food.
Mm-hmm.
So that was quite good.
Hanoi, obviously, we didn't get to. The only one of us allowed up there was Fonda.
Yeah.
She was the only one that got there during the war. And you know, it turned out to be a big hit in her career, as you know.
Hanoi is like Vietnam used to be. In fact, my boyfriend wanted to stay there and live because he had all these Graham Greene fantasies of
yeah,
writing
right.
a novel and uh-huh. having his servant girl.
Yeah, right.
And it's exquisite. It's so beautiful. It looks like Paris. You know, it's laid out like Paris. And it's got the green trees, and the people are still more innocent there.
We are with Dana Delaney. We'll get to more of you on the toll-free exchange after these messages from the local stations. We're back with Dana Delaney. Here is Kirk in Las Vegas, Nevada. Hello.
Hey, what you doing?
Well, I'm sitting here waiting for you, Kirk. Well, that's what I'm doing.
I am very sorry, Tom. I just want to tell you that, Dana?
Yes?
I just want to let you know that we're bootmakers out here.
Mm-hmm.
We're transfers out of Texas. And the guys were sitting around. They said, let's make her a pair of shoes.
Wow.
So we need to know a few things, and that's about it. That's all we want. Tom
no.
always wants to know.
Now, this is not a foot fetish.
I was just about to ask that.
You guys don't want pictures of old Dana's feet sent over there.
Thanks a lot. I appreciate that. You don't have to send photographs back, Dana.
What do you need to know?
Well, are you a boot, a mule, or a pump woman? What kind of... What would you like us to make for you? It'd take about 2 weeks to get it to you. So.
What's your best item?
Actually, right now, what's hot is our little mules. We have a little slip-on. It's kind of everything we make is custom.
I live in mules. That's all I wear.
You're serious?
Yeah, I am.
Are you?
Wait, hold it. I'm going to go see what she's wearing.
Yes, look. I'll put my foot up.
Put your foot up.
What do you think, Tom?
No, she's got mules on, I swear. And by the way, she needs new ones.
Yes, they're falling apart.
Man, these are really shot. These are shoddy. Man.
Two pair then, eh?
No, one's enough.
Okay. Do you mind leather or what? Because we get a lot of people that are particular about this.
Well, no, I don't mind leather. Is leather mules comfortable?
Well, that's the only really way. It's just that the animal rights people get upset.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm,
so,
yeah.
If you want, we can...
Yeah, but now you see what you've done is...
Now I'm in
now all
position.
Of a sudden, Dana's a killer. She hates animals, you know?
No, what?
You decide, Kirk.
Bad, Tom.
You'll send leather, Kirk.
Okay, okay, give me a size and I'll send them to Tom's office.
7.5.
7.5. Mm-hmm. Sounds good. What about you, Tom? You in the mood for maybe some wings?
And I have a bit of a narrow foot. A B.
Oh, good. Oh, well, you've gotten all the guys excited now, so. What about you? Are you into some boots or something?
No, I don't wear. I don't wear shoes. I wear these. I wear like Reeboks and stuff. You know.
Okay. Well, I don't yell me when the mules show up and your shoes.
And you want a pair?
No, I won't. As a matter of fact, I'll tell you what you do. If you pass a guy in Las Vegas who's sitting on the street and says he's a Vietnam veteran looking for work, make him a pair of shoes, because I can afford to buy some, and I appreciate your consideration, but help out a buddy over there who needs some help for me, would you?
I'll do my best, Tom.
Thank you, Kirk.
Thank you, Dana. Tom, you have a nice time.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
So when the mules come in here, you know, Bob and I will just drink some champagne out of them, and then we'll send them over, okay? Here's Doug, Elgin, Illinois. Hello.
Good evening, Tom. Good evening, Dana.
Hi, Doug.
God, Tom, I'm sorry, you're leaving in November. I really like your show.
These things happen.
Yes, I know. I was just going to comment on before you were talking about the Larry Sanders show. I think HBO is doing some really great stuff in, you know, their programming department.
They sure are.
I think it was a great show. I think Dana did a great job.
Thank you.
Dana looked great on that show, too.
Yeah, it was on again tonight, as a matter of fact.
It was?
Oh, I missed it again.
It was, and China Beach, there was a great loss. It was a great show.
Well, thanks.
Yeah, let's talk about all the stuff that's going off. It's not on anymore. Let's talk all about that stuff.
I don't know, though. House Sitter was a great movie.
Thanks.
House Sitter's going off, too.
No. And Paul Schrader, I was going to mention Paul Schrader. Didn't he do a little movie called Cat People, too?
Yes, he did. Mm-hmm. Very good.
It was a... Oh, well.
You want to say anything about Cat People?
Huh?
Do you want to say anything about Cat People?
No, I was just kind of, I guess I was kind of wandering out there. I was going to say, Dana, though, I don't know, Do you have any other movies you're making right now at the moment? Or?
No, I'm just trying to figure out what I want to do next.
Do you have any more TV? Or?
She's trying to figure out what she's going to do next. Hey, Doug?
Yeah, good night,
sir. No, before
no.
Before you go.
Yeah.
Cat People, was that the one with Natasha Kinski?
Yeah, Natasha Kinski and John Hurd?
Yeah, I like that picture. That was a good show, Cat People.
With that O'Toole. What's her name? Also?
Yeah, Annette O'Toole.
Annette O'Toole,
very
wonderful
good.
Actress.
Yeah, good picture. All right, Doug, thanks for calling.
Thanks, Tom.
All right, bye-bye. You know, whatever happened to Natasha Kinski? She was hot, hot, hot.
Well, she got married.
It was a lot of people get married.
But I think he lived over in the far Middle East somewhere. I'm not sure. I don't know. I know nothing. I know that they're not together anymore. Let's gossip about Natasha Kinski.
By the way, what's the word in the acting community out here about the Woodman, Woody Allen?
I thought you were sick of hearing about that, Tom.
Not from your lips, Dana.
I think everyone's just really sad about it.
Yeah.
It's just very unfortunate.
I don't think the molestation charges are true.
I don't. My instinct is no, but we won't know until perhaps.
Hey, we're never going to know.
When you're right, it's not going to go to
we're
court.
We're never going to know.
No.
But my feeling is that those charges are not true. Here is Elizabeth, Atlanta, Georgia. Hello.
Hi, Tom. You have a great taste in guests.
Thanks. I sure do.
I thought China Beach was an extraordinary show. It was probably the best drama that has ever been on television, in my opinion.
Thank you.
I was a high school senior who had dreamed about writing since I was about 3 years old until I saw some of the teleplays written by John Sackrett Young and Carol Flint.
Mm-hmm.
I thought I could never be that good.
Oh, you got to try. You can use them as role models.
I know. It was discouraging and inspiring at the same time.
Yeah.
I was wondering, they were so fortunate to have found you for the role. It was a perfect coupling of brilliant writing and brilliant acting. I was wondering, do writers and actors ever network and sort of work together and develop projects or tailor-make scripts for particular actors?
Yeah, they do. I mean, I came to China Beach totally cold. When I read the script, I felt as if it had been written for me. I mean, I really clicked with it. But yes, people always develop things together.
Well, I wish you the best of luck. I love seeing everything you're in, and I think you're a great talent.
Thank you.
Okay, good night, Elizabeth.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Last thing a tuna fish hears, that sound right there when they close the can. We'll be right back with Dana Delaney after these messages. We are back with Dana Delaney, one of the stars of China Beach. Listen, I hope that you win an Emmy Award on Sunday night. I really mean that.
Oh, thanks.
I've got one. I figure everybody should get one.
I have one.
Oh, yeah?
Am I being greedy if I want to?
No, that's okay. I'll tell you, I have two. I have one for the network and one for a local station in New York where I did the news good, and they gave me an Emmy for that. So I hope you win. You know who has never received an Emmy Award, and I did not know this until I read a magazine about satellite television this morning. We all know who is the one. Susan Lucci has never gotten it. Do you know that after I don't know how many years of Murder, She Wrote, Angela Lansbury has never received an Emmy Award?
Well, I know because that's my category. So every year we're up together. It's ridiculous that she's never gotten one.
Of course it is.
She gets a lot of Golden Globe Awards. And I'm a huge fan of Angela Lansbury.
How could you not be?
Right? She's it's true.
Yeah, yeah.
There's nothing nice.
By the way, this magazine is called Satellite TV Week, and they list all the categories. And in your category, you're the favorite to win.
Oh, I don't think that's true.
In this magazine, you're their favorite to win.
Mm, well, I've heard that before.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't guarantee that you're going to get it.
Yeah.
But
I don't expect to.
But you never know. Anyway, are these people waiting online here? Yeah. Okay. Here is Linda in Buffalo, New York. Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
I really enjoyed China Beach. I thought that was the greatest picture. I was just wondering real quickly, how was that aging process? How was the makeup involved in that? And were you kind of shocked when you were like, to be 40? kind of talk about this?
Yeah.
You know, Linda, 40 ain't that old.
I know, I am 40.
Yeah, well, listen, I hate to be hanging by my neck since I'm 40.
For being young, I mean, I was wondering, you know, what did it feel like?
Okay, well, very quickly.
That's a good question, actually. The challenge was, you see, I'm 36.
Really?
But I was playing 24 on the show, so we had to, like, extra age me. And I have a very round, youthful face, so you couldn't do too much to me. It was mostly just hair and shadow. You know, gray the hair and shadow, that was it.
Okay, Linda, time's gone. Thanks for calling. Dana, thanks for being
here.
Thank you, Tom. I'll be watching you on Sunday night at the Emmy Awards on the Fox TV network. Dana Delaney, motion picture and television actress. I'm T.S. This is the Tuesday Night Radio Show out of Southern California. And best of all, on many of these stations, we are coming right back. Thanks for listening, everybody.